meeting of Parliament, Friday, 9th September 2016, suspension of standing orders. The Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move under standing order 17 to suspend standing order 71 in order to proceed with the laying on the table of a report.
Papers to delay. The Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, before I proceed to lay the report on the table, can I ask the House to reflect for a moment on the sad passing recently of a member of the local press corps, Sir Derek McGray, who was for many years the editor of one of our local newspapers, The Rock, which recently became an online-only medium. I mean, he's passed away over the period of the summer break, and I'm sure the whole House will want to reflect on the work that Derek did in the period that he was with us as a journalist, a member of the press. Member of the press discharged an extraordinarily important function in getting the message of politicians to the general public and in challenging and testing the message that we were to provide. And Derek was an exemplary member of that call. He would have had contact with all members of the House in that context, and I'm sure that we will all sadly miss him. He was well known, Mr. Speaker, amongst all of us for turning up to the most formal function in the most informal of gear, and well loved by all of us there for that, and I'm no doubt that the House will want to talk to him at the first of my own call for the death of the victim. Mr. Speaker, can I also, before I move to lay on the table, can I recognise in the gallery a lot of friends of Gibraltar from many other parliaments, not just in the United Kingdom Parliament, but also from the European Parliament, who are with us to enjoy the celebration of National Week. Many who are returning to celebrate National Day are with us, some who are coming for the first time, all of them, however, people who have long been looking out for Gibraltar and the issues that concern the rich community beyond our shores. They are, of course, not just welcome in Gibraltar for these events, but also in this Parliament, given that we are lucky enough to be sitting this week just ahead of our National Day celebration. The Speaker has the honour to lay on the table the annual report of the Gibraltar Regulatory Authority for the year ended the 31st of March 2016.
Ordered to lie. The Honourable Minister for Health, the Environment, Energy and Climate Change.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the audit of accounts for the Gibraltar Electricity Authority for the financial years ending 31st March 2012, 2013, 2014 and 2015.
Ordered to rise. The Honourable the Minister for Education, Justice and International Exchange of Information.
Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the annual report of the Parole Board for the years 2014 and 2015.
Ordered to rise. The Honourable the Minister for Business and Employment.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the Employment Survey Report 2015.
Order to rise. We now continue with answers to oral questions. We commence with question number 385, the Honourable L.S. Young.
Mr. Speaker, what plans does government have to take action against the unauthorised use of disabled services?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, I want to start by condemning the improper and unconscionable abuse of disabled days by unauthorised drivers. Government is aware of the current unauthorised use of disabled days, which appears to be mainly by foreign vehicles, We are constantly reviewing this unacceptable and abusive behavior as part of the provision for blue badges under the Sustainable Traffic Transport and Parking Plan, and trust that the new parking enforcement provisions will ameliorate the situation. I want to end Mr. Speaker by saying that anyone who uses a disabled day without authority should be ashamed of themselves.
Question number 386, the Honourable Ellis Yanni.
Mr. Speaker, the government intends to publish the list of the owners together with details of the vessels registered to each berth and the annual rental income payable at Midtown Small Boat Marine.
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, publication of such list reaches data protection legislation. Allocation of berths has been carried out strictly by the berthing waiting list and in accordance with the Small Vessels Mooring Control Rules 2016 and to those applicants without government approval. Annual rental income information will be managed by the elected Mid-Harbour Small Boat Marine Association in line with the constitution of the association.
Mr. Speaker, the Small Boat Marina has cost the taxpayer £24 million. That's £37,000 per boat. That's the cost to the taxpayer. Has the Honourable the Minister received advice to the effect that providing this information is actually in breach of the Data Protection Act? And I need legal advice from the Attorney General's Chambers, because quite frankly, I can't see, I speak from my own knowledge as a lawyer, that it could possibly be the Data Protection Act to provide details of the owners of the berth who have benefited from these berths with £37,000 of taxpayer money per berth.
Because this is the view that has been taken by the government. The view that has been taken by the government is that the disclosure of this information would be a breach of the Data Protection Act. The Honourable Member says that the marina has cost £24 million. That is correct. That is £24 million very well spent. Or is it that the Honourable Member has not made his way around the marina as he offered to go to that? Is it that he has not seen the 700 boats that are now currently berthed at that marina? Is it that he has not seen how Catalan Bay, Sandy Bay, and Eastern Beach is every single day of the summer, teeming with boats, with families, with children, enjoying something which they were never able to do when they were in office? Having not seen that, certainly money was spent, certainly we would have done it again, and what we certainly can't do is disclose an angle of the vessel.
So, Mr. Speaker, of course it's a very good idea to provide birth at a cost of £37,000 per birth to everybody that wants one, Mr. Speaker. But the reality is that when you govern, there are priorities. And the government has spent, Mr. Speaker, let me remind them again, £750 million in 4 years, which is more than we spent in 16 years when we were in government, Mr. Speaker. And it is about priorities, and there are many more priorities that the government should have spent £24 million rather than providing beds at a cost of £37,000. A pot, Mr. Speaker, for each individual. And that is incumbent on the government in these circumstances to come to this House and to provide the information that allows your position to hold it to account. Because we want to know who has benefited, Mr. Speaker, of this largesse of £37,000 per day. And Mr. Speaker, he has not answered the question. Because the question was, has the government obtained advice? I'm not interested whether the government is collectively, or the government has taken the view that it infringes data protection. I am interested in whether the government has obtained legal advice to that effect. That is the question.
Now,
May I warn the Honourable Minister that in answering the previous question, he was debating.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course it's about priorities. Of course being in government is about exercising government. And of course it's about deciding how we spend taxpayers' money. And the marina has not been started in the last few months. It was finished a few months ago. But it was started a couple of years ago, during the first term of office. And let me remind the Honourable Member, how many was it? Almost 70% of the electorate voted to return this government to office. Building the marina at the cost of £24 million, and therefore the electorate endorsed that, 100% endorsed that. They also saw that we built a university. They also saw that we built new schools, and everything else that we did in the first term of office, something which no other government has done in the history of Gibraltar. And let me also remind the Honourable Member when he criticises this, that it's not just the debt holders that are enjoying the 700 beds. Have you not seen the road and the facilities that are provided there? Have you not seen the people fishing, giving back the sea to the people after a lot of reclamation has been done and denied access to the sea through the 16 years that they were in office? Have you not seen that? Have you not gone with family to enjoy what every single Gibraltarian is now enjoying as a result of the policy that we have taken? And have you not seen the super yacht? But no visitable
no order. Super yachts have nothing to do with the small boat marina. Well, we are beginning to debate once again, and you're not answering the question, you're actually asking questions yourself.
Mr. Speaker, the project that we have built was for a small boat marina for 700 beds, a public promenade with 50 facilities, and a super yacht wharf. That was the closure. That is what we spent £24 million on. Not on just the debt. So won't the Honourable Member just divide the figure by 37, by 700, and comes up with that figure? He seems to forget that we have a public amenity there. And not just a public amenity, a commercial amenity also for the port that is actually generating revenue, something which Gibraltar has never had, the possibility of attracting super yachts to birth in Gibraltar for a while and to be able to benefit, for the whole of Gibraltar to be able to benefit. We're very proud of what we did, we're very proud of the commitment, and so is the rest of Gibraltar.
All very simple. A supplementary question, I take it.
Yes, it is. Mr. Speaker, I will be brief. I'll be grateful to the Minister to advise this House whether he has personally been allocated a berth in a small boat marina. So whether I've been personally allocated a berth or allocated a berth. Yes, Mr. Speaker, I do have a berth. I had a berth in Water Gardens Marina, and those in Water Gardens Marina have been all berth holders at Water Gardens Marina were offered the opportunity of transferring to the new marina, which I did. I was also, as it happened, on the port waiting list, irrespective of the berth that I had in the small boat marina. I was number 400 and something on the list. So given that we have 700 berths, I would inevitably have been able to enjoy, as with the rest of the Gibraltarians, the right to be allocated a berth in accordance with the criteria set out in the small vessels mooring control rule, which has been strictly controlled by the captain of the port, strictly controlled by the captain of the court and his team, and we set up for the first time in legislation how that criteria was to be adopted. We are 100% convinced that that criteria has been faithfully adopted by the court authority, and that those who were entitled to the reverse, let me say, including myself, have been allocated to the reverse.
Mr. Speaker, if I might just one more supplementary note, and while the question has been answered, I want it to be absolutely clear in my mind that while it is I understand the position of government that it's not necessary under the Data Protection Act, or not possible under the Data Protection Act to release the names of shareholders, as it is the view of the opposition that it should be possible to release those names, but no advice has definitively been received from the Attorney General that those names should not be released under the Data Protection Act.
Mr. Speaker, that is not the position. The Honourable Gentleman has not got it right, and he needs to understand what the position is.
I have told them before, but of course, because of the politics that they want to do with this, the answers that they get are not relevant because they are not going to assist them in what they want to do. I have told the House before, Mr. Speaker, in the context of this relating to housing, that the Data Protection Commissioner has told us that we are not to publish lists, because those lists with names are not things that the government as a data controller should publish. Whether it's a list of people who have taken birth of a small business owner, whether it's a list of people who have put their names down on the housing waiting list for 2RKB, 2RKB, or another permutation. The advice the government has from the data commissioner in Gibraltar is that as a data controller, the government cannot publish. So it's not the Attorney General's figure, it's actually the authority itself that has the obligation to protect the information that we have gone to and has given us that advice. And if the figure they don't like it, they might like to reflect upon the fact that that was a piece of information that they brought to this House, that they enacted in this House, that they took a that they appointed, in keeping with European obligations, and that therefore we have to comply with. So, Mr. Speaker, I think it is abundantly clear that the position of the government is based on advice, not from the attorney, it's based on advice from the party that determines and has in law the right to determine whether or not something being published is in breach of the Act or not in breach of the Act. Now, Mr. Speaker, what they're saying is that they should publish this because they want this, even though we put ourselves in breach of their law. I would not be surprised because, given how they are taken to act contrary to the things that they used to do when they were in power, I would not be surprised to see them ask us to act against one of their own acts. Now that I'm on my feet, it may be a propitious moment to add. The things that the Honourable Gentleman was, my Honourable Ministerial colleague was saying in the context of these answers relating to the small boat marina. Because of the issue of the speaker is cost and the risk of the public, because they want to know who benefited from the cost that we have incurred, Mr. Speaker, and who has advised us that we cannot publish the list. Well, Mr. Speaker, I must tell them the cost is very close to just double the amount that they sunk in a hole in the ground of a theatre royal, for which there has been no benefit to anyone, but principally the people who have benefited from the small boat marina are the people who've been on waiting list for the 16 years that they were in government. People who were laid up with their boats not in the water for the 16 years that they were in government. And as for the amount of money that we spend, Mr. Speaker, we spend them on this among the many other great things that we did, including the creation of homes for our people, which, when it's convenient to them, Mr. Speaker, they urge us to do more of. Because there's a question on the older people from the older decision last year when we're going to get on with the housing estate. So, on the one hand, they tell us not to spend, and on the other, they're going to ask us, when are we going to spend? On the one hand, they tell us the break is the most important thing, and we mustn't complete the manifesto, and on the other hand, they tell us that we haven't completed our manifesto. Mr. Speaker, it is such obvious contradictory politics that even the most basic journalist could be through it, and the electorate certainly has.
Question 387. Question number 387, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister say when will the Gibraltar Development Plan update be complete and when will the revised plan be published?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, instructions have been given to commence a review of the 2009 Development Plan. The detailed work is yet to commence, so it is therefore not possible to provide an indication of the time that this process will take at such an early stage. The House will recall that the precursor of the 2009 Development Plan was dated 1991.
Question number 388, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
In the press release of 9th November last year, government announced that all infrastructure work for the installation of speed cameras had been completed and that, combined with a review of the speed limit, the measure would go a long way in reducing the incidence of indiscriminate speeding, which will no doubt make our roads safer for all. The cameras do not appear yet to be in service. When does the government believe that they will be in service?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, this project is currently at a very advanced stage, and it is hoped that the cameras will become operational in the next few months. The traffic amendment bill, Mr. Speaker, is in the agenda and may be proceeded upon in this meeting of Parliament. These statutory amendments are required for the implementation of the speed cameras.
So this is just referring to the press release by the Honourable Gentleman issued on the 9th of November last year, when he said that the project is expected to go live in early 2016 after a period of public awareness. Does the Honourable Minister agree with me that the project is now somewhat delayed from government's initial expectations as to when that project will be delivered?
Mr. Speaker, I have replied to my question. Without this bill going to Parliament, it is impossible for us to proceed with the two channels, and that is the reason why they're taking that decision.
Question number 389, the Honourable T.N. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, has the government completed its review of speed limits announced 7 months ago, in fact now 9 months ago, and if so, is it intending to publish that review?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the government can confirm that the speed limit review of all existing roads in Gibraltar has been completed by the Highway Section of the Technical Services Department. The review has drawn on data obtained from multiple speed radars erected around Gibraltar Road as part of the development of a sustainable traffic transport and parking plan. Implementation of the speed limit review will be phased and it is therefore not considered prudent to publish the documents whilst works are ongoing. As part of this review, I can now confirm that the Technical Services Department in consultation with the Royal Gibraltar Police have already effected changes to the current speed limit from Waterport roundabout to Colding Island roundabout to North Mall Road, Europort Avenue and Bishop Caruana Road. This has seen the existing speed limit in the area increase from the previous 30 km per hour to 40 km per hour. Full details of all changes to existing speed limit will be advised to the general public as each phase of work is implemented.
Question number 390, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Transport say what roads have been resurfaced as part of the road resurfacing programme since the 1st of January 2016?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, as part of the Majesty's Government's Highway Resurfacing Plan for 2016-2017, sections of Reclamation Road and Kingsway at the entrance and exit point to the new Midtown Multistory car park have been completely resurfaced. The Technical Services Department are currently finalising the contract documents for further resurfacing work at both the Sandell Roundabout and the north section of Cumberland Road. The tender for these works will be announced imminently and will see a continuation of government's ongoing commitment to highways resurfacing, which in 2015-2016 saw the resurfacing of the southern section of Queensway from the Dockside Roundabout until the entrance to Commonwealth Park, as well as resurfacing of the roundabout leading to Morrison Supermarket on Newport Avenue.
Question number 391, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
It is question 74 of 2016. Can the Minister for Transport say when the ready bike scheme, first announced by government nearly a year ago now during the election campaign, will actually be ready and available to the public?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the government is presently considering options to outsource the management, running and maintenance of the scheme by third parties. We are waiting to carry out the final infrastructural work and until the team is absolutely ready to launch to avoid unnecessary damage to the hardware.
Mr. Speaker, to quote the Minister, in August, in fact, last year, he said, I'm pleased to announce the government received a confirmation of bicycles and their associated infrastructure on the 5th of August, and that all enabling work for the bicycle stations is now being complete. It would seem, therefore, from the Minister's answers, that there are still infrastructure work to be completed, does the Minister really believe it's reasonable that 30 months ago, now the listing was announced imminent and to be launched early in 2016, but in fact the scheme has still not been launched?
The Speaker, the scheme, as you all remember, rightly says, the bicycles were received back in August and they're there kept ready for the launch of the project. In fact, the reason why very small part of the infrastructure has not been completed is because there was need to conduct some negotiation as some land was privately owned. One of the locations where the bicycles were meant to be situated, the land did not belong to the government. Hence, we needed to negotiate with the private company. In doing so, we have decided to relocate the bicycles to a very nearby location, and that is the reason why the project, the infrastructure set part of the project, has not been completed.
Speaker, surely, if the Honourable the Minister makes an announcement and he says he's received a consignment of bicycles and their associated infrastructure, and he says all enabling work for the bicycle stations have now been completed and we're aiming to be in a position to launch by early 2016, surely he must have undertaken all the necessary inquiries to determine whether the land on which that infrastructure is going to be located is land available to the government. I mean, otherwise, Mr. Speaker, what we have clearly done is use this as an election gimmick. Because this is something that you announced, as I understand it, during the course of the election campaign. Now, did you expect that it was an election gimmick?
Mr. Speaker, of course not. The Honourable Member's opposition too keen to cut any straw to gather stick. If the Honourable Member takes the trouble to walk around Europort area, he will see that the area where the bikes were previously placed has since actually been dug up and are in the process of being relayed. Consequently, that kit and that infrastructure couldn't be left. So, if you have a walk around, you'll see that it's still dug up, the new pavement hasn't been laid, and the infrastructure works cannot be continued. That's simple. No need to make accusations, allegations of puns or tricks as the men continue to do. It's a very simple explanation. If you ask the question, you get the answer.
With respect to the Honourable Gentleman, that doesn't answer the question. Unless, of course, the Honourable Gentleman is confused in the answer he's given. As I understand it, the answer that he's given is, we're not able to complete this because part of the land in which these stations and some of the infrastructure is being located doesn't belong to the government. And the government is negotiating. And the point that I'm making is, well, surely that was something that was known to the government, to the minister. When the minister made his announcement with great fanfare in November of last year during the course of the general election, I think it is a fair enough question for me to ask you. Well, look, if you knew that at the time, and therefore you must have known that you could never have met that deadline, was it an election gimmick? That's the question. Perhaps you can enlighten me on that.
That's the question, Mr. Speaker. The land on which the road, the pavement area which is going to be used for the siting, is partly private and public and partly private. So it's private and public lands. The developer has agreed to repave the entire area, and consequently the area where the bikes are going to be situated is part public and part private, and those discussions are ongoing. So there is no misrepresentation, there is no secret, it's a simple fact of the paving being done, and therefore the statement made, aiming to be ready in early 2016 with two elections at the time it was made, but since the repaving works have started in the last months, have delayed the implementation of the program. It's quite simple.
Mr. Speaker, if I may ask the Minister,
in the original statement, there's talk of a private sector sponsor, I believe, oil, and that they would be sponsoring phase one, comprising 105 bicycles on 120 docking points for those 11 locations. I'm greatly interested in informed that Go Oil will be meeting the cost of phase one in full, or is it on a 50-50 basis? And does it have an estimate what phase two might cost? Thank you, Speaker.
If I may write to deal with that, the standard Gibor has paid all of the capital costs of the bikes and of the interior kit and the installation of system that over TCA. But I'm grateful that the Honourable Gentleman has opened the issue of election gimmicks, Mr. Speaker, because I do recall many of them. Not in the manifesto headed at a stronger foundation, but in the one that dealt with the issue of Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman, Mr. Speaker, you will know and you will have seen more for longer than me. No, Mr. Speaker,
Members of Parliament from the UK here present, and therefore it was not an appropriate occasion. But I must insist that honourable members do not debate a question time. I haven't got any power, unfortunately, to curtail the length of answers from ministers, but of course I urge them to make them reasonably short. And certainly not to go back to what happened to single elections, I mean, that is past history.
And Mr. Speaker seems not to have not to want to recall the way that this Parliament is modelled in the British Parliament, where although in answers one is not debating, one is allowed to deal with the politics of the subject. And Mr. Speaker, the government will deal with the politics of the subject brought up by the opposition, answering the questions in the context of answers. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Gentleman that there were many gimmicks at the last general election. None of them, Mr. Speaker, in the manifesto titled The Strongest Foundation. Many of them, Mr. Speaker, in the policy booklet that they refer to as the manifesto, and all of them, Mr. Speaker, in the context of the campaign that they run. And the public demonstrated that they saw through them with the results of the last election. And this Parliament, Mr. Speaker, is having to see that a lot of what he was speaking to at the last general election, they had absolutely no intention of seeing through. Because the minute that the votes were counted and they were looking, there are very many rooms, they abandoned all of the arguments that they were deploying. An election gimmick, Mr. Speaker, it was to try and play with the security of our nation and its fuel supply for the future. An election gimmick, Mr. Speaker, it was to talk about the finances of our nation and if there were an issue with them, Mr. Speaker. An election gimmick, Mr. Speaker, it was to present to people a short booklet that, frankly, in any other democracy, they would have been ashamed to present as a serious programme for government. Those, Mr. Speaker, were the gimmicks deployed at the last general election. Everything that we said we would deliver, we will.
Question number 392, the Honourable T.M. Henry.
Mr. Speaker, could the Minister say how long an MOT test takes on average and how many have been conducted by day on each day since 1st of January 2016?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the roadworthiness test takes 20 minutes on average, except for lorries and buses, which take 40 minutes. There are an average of 20 tests carried out per lane per day. The statistics that have been requested regarding the number of MOTs conducted since the 1st of January 2016 is available online for the general public.
Question number 393, the Honourable T.N. Hind.
Can the government say oil interceptors are now installed in all storm drains as recommended by the Southern Water Visibility Management Scheme?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
With respect to the public stormwater system, the Technical Services Department works very closely with the Ministry for the Environment to review areas where there is a risk of oil contamination entering the system. The government can confirm that oil separators or interceptors are being placed whenever new public storm drains are laid. In fact, as part of the recent developments at both Mount Skypenews and Beachview Terraces, three separate oil separators have been placed at the following locations: Eastern Beach Road by the Beach Multi-Story Car Park, at the east side or east end of Derby Style Road by the new roundabout currently under construction, the Commercial Mall Road by Mount Skypenews. We would also like to take this opportunity to confirm that there are several existing oil interceptors at various locations around Gibraltar, which are strategically placed to reduce the risk of oil contamination entering the stormwater system. These interceptors are located at Barbara Estate, the ex-coast park by the Mount Skyper Estate Interceptor Pit, Sanford Car Park, by the Park and Ride on Derby Style Road, Lamport Bridge, and Atoll Petrol Station. The Technical Services Department is not responsible for placing obligations on private developments for the installation of oil separators.
Mr. Speaker, can I confirm or otherwise then that the government is satisfied that it has dealt with the recommendation in the Southern Waters of the Gibraltar Management Scheme that oil interceptors are installed in all storm drains?
If all storm drains are being built, the question is that all storm drains are placed have adequate oil interceptors, apart from the oil interceptors that already exist. So as new developments proceed, these interceptors are placed as we do. So I think from this stage forward, all these interceptors have been applied.
Question number 394. The Honourable T.N. Hughes.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister say what enhancements have been made to the sewage infrastructure system since 1st of January 2012?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the Technical Services Department is responsible for the public sewage and surface water infrastructure network in development. Since 2012, numerous works have been carried out to the network. These are as follows. To the sewage network, the main sewer at Langwell Road from the manhole 4A opposite the backstop of City Hall to manhole 12 at junction with Bonhouse Lane, the repair of collapse by the Haven, claimed and reinforced sound sewer. Construction of new manholes opposite City Hall to access overflow for maintenance and claims the access down to the connecting road. We land the main sewer from the junction with King Street to junction with Bonhouse Lane. Cromwell Park upgrading and enlargement of combined sewer overflow. Wellington Front and Queensway, the routing and upgrading of the combined sewer outflow from Langwell Road under Wellington Front and Queensway. The new east side sewage pumping station to facilitate growth and development from Beachview Terraces and future east side development. Beautiful Avenue, new sewer for a discharge from South Strong House and future development in the area. Rerouting, improvement and enlargement of combined sewer overflow and surface water and the midtown developments, Reclamation Road and Queensville. Derby Style Road, enabling work in preparation for the program relining of the sewer runs along the north and south of Derby Style Road from the junction with Eastern Beach Road to Sunday Roundabout. Newport Avenue, replacing and upgrading of a section of the old large diameter combined sewer overflow, phase 1. Phase 2 has been advertised and consists of rerouting and upgrading the section from the east boundary of Charles Town House to junction with Queensway Legal House. The main sewer at Rose Road is taking and surveyed from manhole 32 to manhole 37A. Main Street, the taking of sewer from Bell Lane to King Street, down to Langwell Road. The section of the combined sewer overflow from City Hall to Europol. Parking system was rerouted under the Midtown development. Now to our specialist water network, Wanda Marina, enlargement and upgrading of the downstream end of the large dam of the surface water culvert, enlargement of the outlet to the key wall and construction of additional manholes to facilitate maintenance. At Chatham Counterpart, new surface water system and pumping station and inspection, the study and design of improvement to system at Main Street North, Johnson with Cooper's Lane, flood alleviation measures. Ex-Coat Park, North Mole, lane of new surface water system to remove flooding by the entrance. Engineer Road surface water system, upgrading of the downstream section. Commercial Mole, new surface water system to drain the road and provide for the connection for Monskite the new development. Rerouting, enlargement and rerouting surface water system from Wellington Pump.
Question number 479, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, since 1st January 2012, and in reference to government projects submitted for guidance to the DPC, have any DPC recommendations not been adopted, and can the Minister say which, if any, recommendations he has rejected?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it is impossible to provide this information without doing a detailed exercise that would involve a large amount of resources. The information that the Honourable Gentleman has requested would require a painstaking exercise which will take at least 3 months by the Town Planning and Building Control Department, as the information being requested is not presently available in any of their databases.
Mr. Speaker, that answer does surprise me considering I have just asked for government projects, but I should point out that this question is actually tabled back in June, so we have seen a timeline being required. I would suggest that I've been available to government to provide an answer to that question. Will the government come back and provide an answer to the question at the earliest opportunity?
Mr. Speaker, what I've said, I've understood, is that demand and drain on our resources does not merit us having to go through the very cumbersome and painstaking exercise of 15 with many hundreds of files to make sure to see whether the conditions given at DPC is something that our government did from 2012 onwards before government points did not go for the conditions of DPC. Now this is something which increases the transparency of the whole project. It is impossible for us to go through all these files to see whether the guidance provided at DPC stage has been implemented or not. I am pretty sure that things like many occasions this of this boxing, and I honourable member and the Minister for Environment is very that man that these are upset, which is a very important environmental feature. But then many of these things also may not have been completed, so maybe the state is going to do this and it has not completed, so it's impossible for us to see that they've been going, has been completed. So I think it is too laborious for us to use our staff to tie them down for months and then just to provide an answer to the question that your own gentleman is asking.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Honourable Minister how many government projects there have been passed through DPC over the period, even approximately?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the government has actually had notice of that question. But Mr. Speaker, very often, a lot of what these questions are trying to get at are matters which are public. Because the Honourable Gentleman has to, if I have one complaint with the way that the Honourable Minister expressed his answer to the Honourable Minister, he also didn't add, because we now all write because of the answer, that the DPC now needs to publish. Minister, the conditions imposed are imposed publicly, or the advice given has been provided publicly, and the election, if I may put it that way,
occurs also in public, really. Particularly with other projects, it's been the erection of the building in public, and if you've been able to put this stuff together, you can go and check what we have. So, in effect, the people were almost being asked to do the honourable members' work for them. They, you know, can sit in the BBC and Google what the conditions of rise are, and they can go and look at the erection and decide whether the whole thing has the fifth box filter in the place required. It's that simple.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've already been talking about the elections in this house. But Mr. Speaker, it is the honourable member answered the question in his usual style. He's done this before in relation, and he's done it before in relation to credit finance and mortgages. Mr. Speaker, don't even utter the word. Mr. Speaker, he's done it before in relation to it that shall not and cannot be named, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, how can the honourable gentleman expect the opposition to go around the board with a list and ticking off whether bird nests have been erected here or there, Mr. Speaker? I mean, surely, Mr. Speaker, it's the obligation of the government to be accountable to the House and accountable to the opposition in relation to government policy, and this is government policy, and it's their policy in this regard that is being tested, and it must follow that it's a proper question to ask the honourable gentleman whether the government has followed its own policy, and how many times the government has not followed its own policy. Mr. Speaker, is it that the government refuses to provide this information, or will the government provide this information in the future if there is some difficulty in compiling this information? This is definitely information that I think is perfectly proper.
Mr. Speaker, the honourable gentleman poses his question in the style that we have become accustomed to. And let's be very clear, Mr. Speaker. The honourable gentleman makes complaints that we have grown the public sector. Well, we have to grow it even more, Mr. Speaker. We're going to invest public employee time in compiling the full information that the honourable gentleman wants. What, in any event, I'm saying to him, would be information that is available to him. And he needs to understand, Mr. Speaker, that the regime changed and the policy changed. A policy which honourable members of the not only did not believe in, Mr. Speaker, they didn't implement it in the Royal Government, but this would be public meetings of the BBC. They actually spoke against some opposition. So when we implemented public meetings of the BBC, and when we made the town plan of them, we were urged from those benches to reconsider. We did not reconsider, Mr. Speaker. The meeting is now public. The Deputy Chief Minister was hoping to subject the government project for guidance and advice to the BBC. We were told by the greatest libertarian of all time, as he by then was, Mr. Speaker, Lisa Caruana, the Speaker Caruana, that we should not pursue this folly. So we were wrong to make the BBC public. We were wrong to subject our project to guidance and advice. That is our policy. And now the honourable gentleman gets up and says, we want to check whether you are complying with the policy. This is complete the sentence, Mr. Speaker. We want to see whether you are complying with the policy that we think you should not be complying with. And if it requires a lot of public sector employee time to do so, then, well, if you have to employ some more, do so. And all the people to follow up things which are now, as a result of our policy, we say we're against, but we think it's gone public. I think, Mr. Speaker, that I shall continue to be grateful for the opposition that I have been blessed with, Mr. Speaker. But the honourable gentleman needs to know that if he thinks it's supposed to be up to the opposition, to keep a list of the conditions and to check whether they have been implemented, for Mr. Speaker, it's obviously going to be up to us to get somebody to check what conditions have been imposed on us and whether they have been implemented. We are a government that acts in keeping with advice and guidance, because that's why we are voluntarily subjecting ourselves
seek advice and guidance being provided on our project, but we're not going to divert precious public sector time in doing the opposition homework for it. I have no doubt, Mr. Speaker, that we will get that on the table again. If I may continue, I'll try to make it a bit simpler for a member of the Prime Minister. Could the Minister confirm, yea or nay, whether the government has actually taken on board all DPC recommendations in the effective government project? Surely we must know that. No, Mr. Speaker, but let me try and make it simple for the Honourable Member to understand. But what we are saying, Mr. Speaker, is that if we were able to provide that answer, we would have done the exercise, Mr. Speaker. Now, I know that logic may not be his forte, but if I am saying to him that we are not going to do the checking against the list of advice and guidance that has been given, I must also be saying that I cannot give a confirmation that all of it has been done. Otherwise, I would have answered in the first place, given that answer. Mr. Speaker, I may then complete the flow of logic, following on logically, then obviously the Minister of the Chief of the Minister must be saying to his house he just doesn't know, because if he did know, he would have given us the answer. Mr. Speaker, what I am saying is a little bit more sophisticated than that. But let me make it simple for the Honourable Gentleman to understand, because I don't want the Honourable Minister to put the answer across very clearly. Some projects may not have been completed yet. Some projects may have had parts done and other parts not done yet, Mr. Speaker. And there may be some projects where guidance and advice has not been possible to secure. Now, Mr. Speaker, it would be potentially possible to give the option of going back to the very first project, analyzing what the DPC said, going to the building and checking on the building whether the things that the DPC said have been done in the way the DPC said they should be done. And in particular, there is also the process of round robin, which every applicant to the DPC can take advantage of, which is to go back and say, look, we are unable to find, let's give an example, six boxes of a 2x2, and we're going to use six boxes of a 3x2. Is that all right? And you may look at the building, if you're going to do the testing, and you'll see a 3x2 six box instead of a 2x2 six box. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, this is a complete and complete waste of time. The government's not here to waste its time. We're certainly not going to waste our time for the opposition senators. If they want to waste everybody's time, they should go to the meeting, they should make a note, and then they should go and check against the building whether those things have been done that way, varied or otherwise. Until then, I hope we will congratulate them again for holding meetings of the DPC in public, for subjecting ourselves to guidance and advice, and for developing this motion in the way that it deserves, and not holding such meetings in private, not even publishing the minutes, and then people finding huge 30-story erections appearing in the centre of town.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very grateful to the Chief Minister's answer, actually. So, can I just, for my own benefit, be clear then that what the Chief Minister is saying is that he is inviting me to go into any building in Gibraltar that is the subject of a government project, including number 6 perhaps, and do the round and check whether what the DPC has said, whether the building itself or the project, the works within the building, comply with the recommendations of the DPC. Is the Minister, the Chief Minister, is saying that I'm welcome to do this at any time?
From the bigger invitations to the opposition and things that I now routinely have thrown back in my face, I send them invitations and some of them send them back because they're not prepared to enjoy a drink which is funded by the taxpayer. With all the consequences that will happen, because of course I say them at their word, they don't want to have a drink which is paid for by the taxpayer. And of course, that's not all of them because they're divided and everything. I shall take them at their word, Mr. Speaker. But I am certainly not inviting the Honourable Gentleman into any public building, because most of the conditions that are imposed relate to the outside of buildings, Mr. Speaker, because the Development and Planning Commission deals with the look of things in most instances. And if he doesn't like it, Mr. Speaker, well, I suppose that he has much to say, but although I've told him that these things are public, there may be some because they relate to a corridor of a public building where he may not be able to see whether he's done what the DPC has asked us to do or not. But then, of course, he would then have, Mr. Speaker, a short finite list of things which you can ask us whether we have done enough, which does not mean a public servant that has spent many hours pursuing a scholar of the honourable member government will be able to give him a list of the few things which he has observed from the outside of business. There's no issue to speak of, but as long as he's not elected to do that, he's very welcome and to put their cup of coffee and discussing any matter of policy which he might have used.
Of course, Mr. Speaker, this isn't open. This is a genuine test of government policy and whether it's a coherent policy. And going back to the Minister's original answer, which was that this process could be done in 3 months, is the Chief Minister reversing that and saying that this process cannot be conducted at all, and it is not possible for the planning department to conduct the audit.
Mr. Speaker, given this is the effect of the affairs of our land today, the previous position concentrates on this subject is either a hugely potentially beneficial to the government or a real race to tax their funding. But Mr. Speaker, let me just take them through it again. If members of it ask us something which it would take us 3 months to do, what we are saying is we are not going to do it because that is not proportionate. We are not going to invest 3 months of public sector time of a public officer going off to do the exercise for the honourable members of checking whether we have complied with all the advice and guidance that we've been given in a public meeting of the DPC, which they have not bothered to attend. They have not bothered to make a note of, although it's now available to them, and they have not bothered to chip off against the facade, which is where most of these things manifest themselves. What I am prepared to do, if the honourable gentleman does the exercise and says of the however many conditions of guidance and advice that have been provided, I have been able to observe on the outside of buildings so many of them. These relate to the inside of buildings. Can you please go and check the finite list of things that relates to the inside of public buildings? That is a sufficiently short list we will surely check. Other than that, Mr. Speaker, in terms of checking the government, holding us to account and checking our policies, it's their job to do it, Mr. Speaker. And they're doing a mighty, terrible job of it. If what they're trying to do is to get out, to give them our notes so that they can then move them to a center. I mean, Mr. Speaker, really, you could not make this up. You could be ashamed of themselves.
Mr. Speaker, the only claim is in the answers that we're getting this afternoon, Mr. Speaker. And of course, Mr. Speaker, we don't control the agenda. We don't control which questions are asked today and which questions are asked next week. And of course, there are many, many questions on a very wide range of topics, because this opposition is, in fact, on top of its views on a very wide range of issues, Mr. Speaker. But if the Honourable Gentleman, not even prepared, Mr. Speaker, to provide the information of how many of these recommendations have actually been accepted. Not completed, but accepted. And surely, that is something that the government ought to be prepared to provide. That is far less onerous, even though I don't accept the arguments that have been postulated by the government and the opposition from the basic opposition.
Mr. Speaker, opposition and grief, I think, are statements that are worth considering including in a different sort of sentence. Because I think they're going to have very brief opposition careers, Mr. Speaker, they carry on as they are, and not because they come over to this place, but because the public will soon be tired of hearing this sort of petty nonsense at the time when we are looking at serious issues that affect our nation. And logic, Mr. Speaker, seems to have evaded the Honourable Gentleman. I can neither tell him the bit that we haven't complied with, or tell him that we have complied with everything, because we do not have a list against which to sit. That is what I was discussing earlier with the Honourable Mr. Clinton. So, in the same way I can't say I have completed everything, I also cannot say we have not done the following. I cannot start the list from the top, Mr. Speaker, or start it from the bottom. So, Mr. Speaker, let us be clear. Let us be clear, because I don't think they've dropped it, Mr. Speaker. This is now something that happens in public. We have made a rod for our back, Mr. Speaker, because we are Democrats and because we believe that people have an influence in the state that they are in. So, physically, we have made this public. They try to persuade us to keep it private. Secret. We should have legitimately asked them, Mr. Speaker. Look, Any government bodies being subjected to the BBC?
Oh, no.
Because they didn't subject their projects to the BBC control, even when the BBC was private and secret. But we could have asked them about any conditions imposed on private sector development and whether those have been followed. And they might have had to tell us because it was secret, only they had access to the information. They might have deployed the answer they frequently deployed, which we very infrequently deployed, but we're still deploying today. It was just too onerous to compile that information. But with the added law, Mr. Speaker, that this onerous information to compile, this information which is too onerous to compile, is public. And so, Mr. Speaker, they can go and check for themselves. And if they don't get it now, I don't think they will. This debate is nearly descending into having an onerous discussion. We're not going to give the information because it's too onerous and it's public. You can go and get the information. And if we are not able to go now because we can't go back and re-sit in those meetings of the BBC, you can make sure that you are at every meeting of the BBC and you make a note of everything that is said there. That's why you're paid, the salary that you're paid, should be available not just when the House is called, but to do your job for the community 24 hours a day and really.
The matter has been sufficiently ventilated. I'm going to allow a supplementary response to the Honourable Lady, if he hasn't intervened previously, and then we're going to move on to the next question. So this is the last supplementary on the matter.
Sorry to interject. I don't know enough about the e-government or how things have been placed on the digital sphere, but one thing is, and I understand the side of the argument that the Supreme is sitting at a risk position to try and find out. I mean, it is our job, especially if we're going to test them on their policies, but how about the commitment of government to be more transparent? Wouldn't they want to publish their decisions on digital formats or on government websites and have procedures carry on in the name of transparency which they have committed to? Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, I may say the first principle suggested I have heard this afternoon certainly in relation to this matter, except for one aspect, Mr. Speaker, which is that it all already is online. All of the government applications are entirely online. So the other lady has actually put a finger in the wound, if I may say so. If they have not had the time to attend the BBC meeting, then honourable members can download all of the government applications. In fact, I'm reminded by the honourable deputy speaker that we have compelled ourselves by law to put those things online in the new act, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, we're doing it already. They're online. They can download our applications. They can go outside the building and they can say, this is what you applied for. You haven't done that. Why? Well, we could not be more transparent, Mr. Speaker. We could not be more transparent. We could not have gone further than we have. Compared to where we were, Mr. Speaker, it is not 5 years since I have been Chief Minister. That happy anniversary will be on the 9th of December this year. And in those 5 years, we have abolished the secretive planning system that was in place under the GOC. We have ensured that everything happens in public. And we have subjected government projects to that BBC control for guidance and advice. The former power station, which honourable members insisted on building before the 2011 election and before the 2015 election, was an emanation of no advice. The GOC wanted it there it went, no planning. The current power station had gone to planning. It would have received guidance and advice, and yesterday, Mr. Speaker, on the way back from the procession, honourable members of the Speaker, I'm with you of the huge progress already being made in that respect.
Question 480.
Question number 480, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, heard of questions 191 and 192 of 2016. Can the Minister say whether, as part of the sale of a blue bus fleet at Sea Calypso Transport at £1,000 per bus, there was a transfer of any spare parts or engines associated with those buses, and if so, whether those parts were part of the sale agreement or were sold separately to Calypso Transport, and if the latter, at what price?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, no, there was no transfer of any spare parts or engine associated with those buses.
Mr. Speaker, may I just refine or speak in to the answer? The question was in relation to the spare parts and engines in relation to or associated with those buses. Were there any other engines or spare parts associated that were not associated with those buses that were transferred to this particular company? We did not that I'm aware of.
Question number 481, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Of the road vehicles registered in Gibraltar, can the government provide a breakdown of how many vehicles were petrol, how many diesel, how many hybrid, and how many fully electric as of 1st June 2014, 1st June 2015, and 1st of June 2016?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Gentleman is listed in the schedule. I will now hand over.
It is a short schedule, it's not very long, so I'm going to give a minute to the Honourable Member an opportunity to have a look at the members who wish to come and ask any supplementary. One question. Does the government consider, in terms of its policy towards encouraging the use of electric vehicles in Gibraltar, so that policy to have been a success when, in the two years since 2014, the number of electric vehicles on our roads has risen from 15 to 25 by 10 vehicles, when you consider that there are over 25,000 petrol vehicles on the road at the same period?
The government has got rid of import duty on these vehicles. Apart from actually paying for the vehicles ourselves and encouraging people to buy them, I would say, as much as the vehicles cost that, we do give a couple of things, £1,000, if I'm not mistaken, to encourage people and incentivize people to buy electric vehicles. But it must be said, electric vehicles are still more expensive than the petrol or diesel counterparts. And hence, people when they're testing vehicles, like the economic situation, may not allow them to buy an electric vehicle. And I think that is really the battle at hand. With time, I'm pretty sure that the manufacturing of vehicles will be reducing the price of these vehicles, and that itself would encourage people to buy them. But if you look at hybrids have increased, and we are seeing an ever increasing amount of hybrids being sold, and the jump from 10. Back in 2014 to 113 in 2016 is really proof that our policy to encourage people to purchase more environmentally friendly vehicles are actually is happening, it's actually working.
Are there enough charging stations for these electric vehicles? Because one thing is encouraging them, but is there an infrastructure to keep them going?
Every time a new car park is built and constructed, the government had the forecast in the very beginning to include electric car points in all the garages. So, in fact, every single car park used to be the one that's intended for public use as mid-timers and as very far is. Or is it a car park which is dedicated to residents only, as a central state of oil or engineering? They all have a facility. Now, in the future, should and as we know, there have never been any complaints brought to my attention, so there is no need to have electric power plants elsewhere. Most of these cars can be charged from normal electrical points, they don't need special charges. So, as and when we hope, as future, more people buy electric cars, then we will need to consider where we place in different locations electric charging points for that purpose. But at the moment, I think we are extremely well-capable.
also on the stage abroad, so to speak. And when one is abroad, Mr. Speaker, there is a dearth of charging points on the road. And I was able to discover there is one charging point on the highway between Gibraltar and Seville, and it may be possible to use my electric vehicle to Seville now as a result of that charging point which we've discovered. But there is literally one place that does it. It has one charging point with charges going in one direction or another, two charging points for every vehicle between Rosario and Seville. So I think the issue is not just charging where you park, but also given the range of these vehicles, in some instances, charging on the
question number 482, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, arising from the answers given to questions number 663 and 664 of 2014, has government now made a decision in respect of a possible residential parking scheme for the whole of the South District, which could or could not include our legal state, and which was being considered under the government's traffic and parking plan?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, I can confirm that the South District and our neighbour states are being actively considered in order to introduce a residential parking scheme in the near future. We hope to make further announcements in the coming months on conclusion of this review.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, so as in 2014, it is actively being considered.
Can I question the Minister for more or less by when this is expected a decision would be taken, given that it's been under this consideration for a couple of years now?
Mr. Speaker, the actual concept of the residential parking scheme is one that we promoted in our manifesto, something which we could work on this too. As to when the South District and the major states will be included, that is a different question. The planning of the residential parking scheme is far more complex than even I would have imagined. There are many, many, many factors into this initiative to be done correctly. At the moment, we're very advanced, and we've actually, what we've done is we've gone for the hardest part of the Gibraltar first. The police administration, when they did the traffic plan, their residential parking scheme, the right away was relatively simple, which was part of the North District, where there are ample amounts of, although at least more parking spaces available, greater comedy of the cars. We actually concentrated our plans on the hardest part first, and that is the centre of town. Centre of town is an area where residents compete with people coming to town for commercial matters, for shopping, etc. And they're the ones who suffer most, in my opinion, when it comes to parking in Gibraltar. So we are concentrating on the town, the centre of town as a whole, including the upper town, and that will be our first scheme. And following on from that, we will then move out in that respect. So it is impossible for me to give you a date as to when the residential scheme will happen in the South District, but it is something that will progress from the central town.
Question number 483, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the new government confirm what initiatives are in place to increase the awareness of cyclists as road users? And thank you very much for contacting me to clarify the next question.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Transport, Traffic and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, there have never been any initiatives in place to increase the awareness of cyclists on our roads. Happily, however, under this administration, two of the key objectives in the section promoting cycling in a sustainable traffic and transport parking plan make reference to the education of other users of the hazards confronting cyclists, publishing and promoting cycling and raising awareness amongst all users.
Mr. Speaker, it's all well and good having that in the traffic plan, but what initiatives do the government intend to roll out in respect of education for our young people and in fact other road users so that they respect cyclists? And I think the most would agree with me that cycling is a very healthy activity,
and it's important to encourage cycling in our community and respect those cyclists.
Mr. Speaker, there are many aspects of cycling, and one of them is to increase the awareness of cyclists themselves, which is the public conversation we had, and actually highlighting the risk to other road users, which is the confusion in the question. When it comes to cyclists themselves, cyclists more persistently and are very sensible, others will always observe it and ask the ways with the dangers themselves. The IGP themselves, they have cycling proficiency courses whereby the cyclists take and teach cyclists that they are also a vehicle on the road and they need to observe all the traffic traffic signs and indicate, etc. So that is one of the things that already happened. The government is looking at initiatives to be able to help cyclists even further. As part of some time, we're exploring the possibility of, I think it's called advanced junction boxes, or which is in that is allowing an area just by traffic lights where vehicles cannot stop, where only cyclists and motorcycles can stop, giving cyclists especially that at this extra time get cycling before the cars come after them. So that those advanced junction points, advanced stop boxes, they're called, is something which we're actively considering. Now, as opposed to educating people, other drivers, and that is something which we will explore because it is in fact the traffic sign itself which is telling us that this is something that should happen. I have an excerpt of that, which is a public document, and which it actually we will be looking at how to keep people resisting from bicycles as they overtake. For example, the first part of the plan which I've committed to and something that we should be seeing sometime towards the end of this year.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to move that the House will now adjourn to Thursday, the 15th of September at 3 p.m.
And I ask the Honourable Speaker this time. We have now dealt with all the questions that were originally submitted at the July meeting. I understand there are a number of questions that have been submitted by the opposition since then. Are we going to be dealing with those Thursday next week? Thank you. The House will now adjourn to Thursday, the 15th of September at 3 p.m.